with Arthur Yoakum,
Joakum,
for the Youngstown State University Oral History Program by Elaine Fowler at 3137 Meadowood Drive in Campbell, Ohio, on July 13th.
Meanderwood,
Drive, on June 13th at 10:10 a.m. What do you remember about your parents and family?
Well, I lived in the South High School area, and I was an only child, and my parents, I imagine, intended for me to go to college. But when the war came along, the question going into September 1942 was whether you would be able to finish the year of senior year of school, or whether you would have to go into the service. And we found out we could finish the year and graduate. So I did graduate in June 1943. On May 15th, 1943, while I was still 17, I enlisted in the Navy. I did so because I wanted to, also because in the back of my mind, when I turned 18, I would be going in to be drafted. And I wanted to be in the Navy, so if I enlisted, why, that would be taken care of. So I did that the day of our senior prom on May 15th. And then an unexpected thing happened. I was put on inactive duty. They wanted to call me up, and they did so not until the 1st of November. And I was put in a officer training program at Oberlin College, and I got in two semesters there of college. And then when that was over, this was around July 1, 1944, the program, the Navy program for officer training, was cut in half, and I was in the wrong half. So I went to boot camp for 3 months, and after that I went out to San Francisco and became a mailman in the Fleet Post Office, because in my senior year I had, during Christmas vacation, worked 2 weeks down at the main post office in Youngstown. And with that experience, the only experience I could put in my dossier in the Navy, they said that they would make me a mailman. And then I served 6 months out in San Francisco. Didn't live in barracks, I lived on subsistence. I got some extra money, subsistence money, and I could go live wherever I wanted. And I lived, believe it or not, with a French artist, which was an unusual experience. In those days, anybody that had extra room in Frisco had to rent, because there was a need for people in shipyard work and whatnot to find a place to live. In Frisco, the only way you can build is up. And they only had so much room, so if you had any extra rooms, you had to rent out, and that's how I happened to live with this French artist. In the end of March of 45, I was made a third-class petty officer. I had it in my mind I didn't want to go out to sea until I had a petty officer ranking, otherwise I would be what they call a deck ape, 1st and 2nd Division, where you'd swab decks and paint bulkheads and do manual work, and I thought I'd rather do something else. When I got my third class petty officer rating as a mailman, I volunteered to go out to sea and was put on an aircraft carrier. This kind of aircraft carrier was the smallest there was. They were called Jeep carriers, and altogether there were some 75 of them. They were first used to go out with convoys and put some airplanes up in the air to look for submarines. But then later, they used them for all kind of things, invasions and what have you. From the time I got on this aircraft carrier, it was put on transportation duty. It had come from the Western Pacific and had been in action, but it was transferred to transportation duty And what we did is we'd get squadrons of aviators, take them out, train them, and then take them someplace in the Western Pacific where they would do their thing. We traveled all the time from place to place, and we never were more or less stuck in one situation. I was in and out of Pearl Harbor 8 different times. I got to Guam 3 times, and after the war was over, we were part of the magic carpet that brought back servicemen, and we got to Shanghai, China, and brought back some aviators there. All in all, I was on this ship 13 months, and I was discharged from there in Boston, Massachusetts, having gone through the canal, which was an interesting experience. May 1st, 1946, I was on active duty to the very day, 2.5 years. I got to see the world, and I was very satisfied. I wound up a petty officer second class, and my Navy experience was very enjoyable. I got through all of my college on the GI Bill, and 2/3 of my postgraduate work. So it was a very satisfying experience for me.
That's great. Okay, you mentioned the carrier that you were on was a Jeep carrier. Do you remember the name?
Sure. The Caddishan Bay. USS Caddishan Bay, CVE. That was the type of carrier it was, CVE, escort carrier. 76. I got a picture. All the airplanes have propellers.
And this was an aircraft carrier.
And the faster airplanes at the end of the war had a hard time landing and taking off because it was a small carrier. Corsair was an airplane that they could just make it by landing and taking off. We had mostly Hellcats and Helldivers on our carrier.
Okay, how many planes?
About 24, I think, altogether. It was one squadron.
You said the canal was an experience in itself.
Well, interesting. We had liberty on both ends of the canal. And I remember the troops, American troops that they had down there were from Puerto Rico, which was interesting. And also you saw some of Latin America, and you saw a lot of poverty. And they had these little jitneys that would take you around for transportation. They weren't a taxi cab, but they were little jitneys, and you were glad to get out of them because their traffic habits were very hilarious.
What exactly is a jitney?
It would, for instance, pick you up on one street and take you where you wanted to go, but on the way they might stop to pick me up. They might stop and pick up 5 different people. In other words, it was not a cab. It didn't belong exclusively to you. It was more like a bus.
Okay.
And they had those in Frisco, by the way, during the Second World War.
They had those in.
Yeah.
Aboard the carrier, what was a typical day like?
Well, you got up about 4:30, quarter to 5 in the morning, and you went to your battle station until it was, this was during wartime, until the sun had been up for a half hour. That was because subs would attack usually a half hour or an hour before dawn and maybe the first half hour afterwards. My station was up on the bridge the island, as they called it, the island of the aircraft carrier, and I had in contact with 17 lookouts. I was the contact man and stood right beside the gunnery officer, and the 17 lookouts would report to me if they saw anything, and the gunnery officer then would hear my report. They were to report anything they saw floating in the water, anything at all that was unusual.
And then after that?
Well, then the gunnery officer would take it from there, you know, if it was going to I don't recall him seeing anything dangerous to shoot at. But if he saw something that a lookout didn't see, he'd get very angry, and he'd want me to get very angry with this lookout. Now, this lookout might be more highly rated than me, and I was or older than me, and I was supposed to get angry with him, which was very difficult. Maybe he might be bigger than me, too.
Of course.
Well, that was the first thing. Then we'd go to chow, and the meals were like, your heaviest meals were breakfast and lunch. Supper was just to tide you over. You would have meat and potatoes for breakfast. You would have beans for breakfast. You would have pie maybe for lunch, and supper like was more of a delicacy. Sunday evening, chow was the lightest of the week. Sunday noon was the big, you might have chicken or something like that. That was the big deal. Our two biggest meals were on VJ Day and I should say VE Day first, Victory in Europe, and then Victory in Japan later. And we had a banquet each time, a steak, pass out cigars, and we had a menu printed. That was really something to eat high on the hog those two occasions to celebrate. We were out to sea on both occasions.
On both occasions. So it was very festive whenever you heard that the...
Very festive, right. I heard about the war being over in August 15th in 1945, and we were at Aniwetok. I think this is of interest. We were going to rendezvous with the Third Fleet for the invasion of Japan, which was to come off the 1st of November. And when Harry Truman dropped the atomic bombs, why that in August, why that cut that to the end of the war real, it came real quick. So I always had a good feeling for Harry Truman, and there was never any question in my mind that I thought his dropping the bombs was the best of choices. Sometimes you don't have a good choice. So it could have saved my life. And it was thought we'd have casualties, would it be anywhere from a half a million to a million altogether. The second invasion of Japan was to come off in March 1st of 46. And that would have been the island where Japan was. And the Japanese had fought to the death. In the two big battles in 1945, Iwo Jima and Okinawa. And so when they were going to fight on their homeland, they certainly were going to fight to the death there. And that would include civilians who were going to fight to the death. So it was a wonderful thing when that war was over in August of 1945.
Did you see anything of any significance that really set in your mind in any of the travels?
Well, I enjoyed seeing China. And I'll show you some pictures I got there. The poverty and the number of people. And you could, anytime you were in China, you could smell it too. Yeah, when if somebody wanted to relieve themselves, they just did so at a corner. It was semi-public all the time, and they used it also in the fields. They used it for fertilizer, so you could smell Japan. I smelled China. That would be the same for Korea, and I wasn't at Japan, but it might be the same there. Also, they had this in the October of 1944. They had a terrific hurricane, which our ships were not our ship, but other ships were in, and three of our destroyers went down with all hands in this typhoon. They call them typhoons out there. Now we were in a bad storm coming away from China, and we had to have repairs made in Pearl Harbor and then come back to the States for repairs. But it was not like that typhoon in October of 44. After that bad storm, we were down at Guam and we saw some of these big aircraft carriers with their edges peeled down like some giant had peeled down the corners of these flight decks, and the storm had done that, the waves had done that. So that was fascinating to see the damage that a storm at sea could cause.
Peeled down, you mean just...
Peeled down at the corner. Yeah. Bent down like some giant had done it. let's see. We went to Maui, which one of the Hawaiian islands, which was beautiful. Beautiful. We picked up Marines to take them back home after the war. And and we crossed the equator, and we had the ceremony when you go from a polywog to a shellback in a day-long initiation. And that was an interesting, and I have a tape of that, a videotape.
Now, what is a polywog?
A polywog is somebody that hadn't been across the equator. And you were gone, you went through a ceremony by the old hands, have been through this, and after a day where you were a shellback then, see. And you get a certificate, of which I can show you the certificate I have. And if we went down to do the New Admiralty Islands to a place called Manus, below the equator, and that's what all this...
Manus.
And we asked the fellas that were stationed there what they thought of their duty in Manus, and they thought that, and they said Manus was the anus of creation. Oh, and I was a ship's mailman, and to take the mail on the beach at Manus, they told us that the natives might steal the mail, so to sit on the sacks when we went into the fleet post office, and the natives, I noticed their hair was all dyed orange, and it was bushy, and that was of interest to see the orange bushy hair. And we didn't have any mail taken from us. And it was so hot in Manus that you would sweat even though you weren't moving. Yeah, the sweat would just roll down your forehead because it was so close to the equator. And you'd stand under a tree and still sweat, and with the sweat pouring off your forehead.
My goodness. And that was Manus?
The New Admiralty Islands.
New Admiralty.
Oh, another thing about, we didn't have a ship's reunion until 1991. And I've gone to all five of the reunions, 91 through 95, and I'm going this reunion in 96 in Las Vegas. The first one was in Reno.
Well, we're going to digress a little bit. I wanted to know a little bit about your childhood, such as games or anything about the neighborhood.
Softball. That was on playgrounds. There was very little, if any, organized sports. You went down to the corner where you lived, and the fellows on your street would play the fellows from the next street over in a game of softball. You'd have one softball, it was during the Depression, and you had maybe a couple of bats, and the guy with the softball, he'd want to pitch, or he'd take his softball home. It was very unorganized. Also, our football, we didn't have any equipment. We played tackle on the sand lots, and it'd get scraped. And it was good training because it hardens you up. And we played tackle, not touch. And so that was the two main things. And tennis. As we got older, we played tennis on the city playgrounds.
Okay. Do you remember anything about your school?
Yeah. I went to Sheridan, named after Civil War General. That's grade school. Went to Princeton for junior high. That was 7th, 8th, and 9th. And that's named after a battle in New Jersey in the Revolutionary War. And then I went to South High, 10th, 11th, and 12th. The big thing in high school outside of the academic side was the football games. We all took that very serious.
Why did you decide to join the Navy?
Well, as I said, you were going to go, if you were healthy, you were going to go anyhow. And you were happy that you were able to graduate from high school. And so if you could enlist, you could pick and choose. So I wanted to be in the Navy. I wanted to be in the Navy because they said you had 3 square meals a day and a clean place to sleep.
That's a good reason.
Yeah.
Did you have any training while you were in?
We had training in this officer training program at Oberlin College for 8 months, and that was quite good. I enjoyed that, and academically, Oberlin was a good college to go to, and I enjoyed the subjects. There was one subject I flunked twice, and I flunked it yet today. That was physics. And that was part of the reason why July 1, 1944, I was separated from the program. At boot camp, they had a 3-month-long boot camp, and that was like a, it was like a 3-month Boy Scout camp. I mean, I enjoyed it. Some of the kids had a hard time, but I enjoyed all the training with the riflery, and they trained you, for instance, if there was a fire, and you had this big spray hose, and you would go into a fire that was on all sides of you, but as long as you kept the spray hose in front of you, you were all right. And you had artillery training. I don't know why, but they had to put in their time, you know, train you for something. And it was good for discipline. I enjoyed boot camp. And the interesting thing, I think, is once you went on board ship, unless you worked at it, you could get out of shape because you weren't doing something physical all the time. I was fortunate enough with my assistant to be able to live in my post office, and I could do calisthenics in there. I also took up boxing and was a boxer on board ship, and we would put on 3-round bouts. And the gloves were not skin tight, they were these pillows, they more or less, with stuffing in them, and we learned to box. So I kept in real good shape. And when I go on the beach, I'd go to the YMCA and work out with weights. So that was good training.
That was very good.
Another interesting thing, to my mind, is the officers were really what you'd call gentlemen then. I go to see movies nowadays, and you know, they're the modern day idea of what World War II officers were like in the Navy. And they curse and swear and do all kind of things like that. But the officers that I had anything to do with always were expected to act like gentlemen and to conduct themselves as such. And like, let's say a bunch of enlisted men were cursing and swearing in a motor whale boat as you were going into the beach, why, an officer would stop you from doing it. So it's different than what they portray in the movies today.
Very interesting. Where was this camp that you basically?
Boot camp was Great Lakes. They had about 4 boot camps all around the country in different places, and that was the big one. There was maybe 100,000 men there at one time in Great Lakes, and that's north of Chicago.
Of all of your duties, which one did you like the best?
Well, being the ship's mailman, that was a good rate. That was a political rate. You had some clout with that. You were in K Division. That was communications, and men on board ship and other divisions, like the cooks, they would do little favors for you, and you did little favors for them. And let's say somebody won a lot of money around 8 or 9 o'clock at night, and he didn't want to take his money back into the general quarters with him. Let's say he had $800 or $1,000. Well, he'd come to the post office. The post office was closed, of course, but I would be in there. I lived in there, and he would maybe slip me $10 or $15 and ask me if I'd make out some money orders for him, so he wouldn't have to take that $1,000 into the quarters with him. So it was a political rate, and people were good to you, and even the officers were nice to you, and it was a good rate to have. And the way it sounded, it was MAM second class. That's what I wound up, petty officer second class. Big M, little A, big M, mailman. There was the 2 of us on board ship, and there was 1 mailman for every 500 Navy personnel. It's the same as buglers. Buglers, 1 for every 500 personnel.
Oh my goodness. Is there a major event that happened during your tenure?
A major event?
Other than VJ Day.
VE and VJ. No single. Well, I can remember signing the peace treaty on September 2nd, 1945. This was right after the war. That was on the Missouri, and they broadcasted it. And we had a radio in our mess hall. And this is of interest. There were 3 of us were listening to the signing of the surrender, keeping our ears glued to the radio, but the rest of a lot of the guys were just out playing poker and and games they made. They knew the war was over and they weren't interested in the history, but I happened to be. The biggest thing was getting to the beach, coming to port and going on Liberty. Well, an interesting thing, I think, is you would shove off, let's say, from Frisco, and you had no idea where you were going. And you would go and go and go, and you'd wind up in Guam. And you didn't know you were in Guam until the day you went in. And then you would pull out of Guam, and you'd go and go and go, and you had no idea where you're going. And they'd say, today we're going to pull into the Wang Pu River and go up the river to Shanghai. And you had no idea where you were going.
Amazing. So you were never in any...
No action.
No action.
We were on transportation duty. Now we were, I missed out, you know, when the war was over and we didn't invade Japan, but the ship, the men, the gangplankers on board our ship, the guys that came with the ship, they had, they had maybe 5 battle stars. And they had been in the Battle of Leyte Gulf, which was the biggest battle of all. And they were one of the ships where the aviators had scared the Japanese admiral enough, who was in charge of that he got cold feet and retreated when he could have caused a lot of damage with our troops that were landing on the beach. But he fled.
Is there any particular person on this ship that you remember?
Well, I got pictures of the captain. The executive officer came on board ship the same time I did. And he was the one that was, he'd go around and roust you and roast you and cause all kind of problems for you. I mean, he was the one that carried out the captain's orders. And I was afraid of him, actually, because I was only, 19, 20 at that time, and I was afraid I'd get... One time he came in from the beach when he had too much to drink, and he was buddy-buddy with myself and my assistant. The assistant was called the striker, by the way. My striker.
A striker?
The striker, yeah. And he and I were sorting them out the mail to get it ready to take on the beach. The exec comes in. He wasn't supposed to come in the post office. Nobody except us were supposed to be in. But he's coming in there buddy-buddy, see, and he's talking that way. And we were worried because we knew he was going to sober up and going to have to recuperate, come down there and get his authority back, So we kept our mouths shut. Now after he left, sure enough, he shows up later on and he comes in the post office again. He finds something wrong in there just to recapture his authority and to let us know that he was bossy.
Do you remember his name?
Edwards. His first name I can't remember, but Edwards was his last name. Now he hasn't come to any of our reunions. We've lost him. We don't know where he went. But the captain on board ship was in his 40s. He's now in his middle 90s. He comes to our reunions.
And his name?
And his name was Monroe. And he gave the main speech at the banquet here 2 years ago.
My goodness, 90-something years old. On your typical day, you said what was the evenings like?
Well, now, for instance, my post office was open in the morning. It was open in the afternoon. And then the evenings was more or less leisure time. I myself never had to go on watch. My striker had to go on watch, and most guys, seamen, and a lot of the petty officers had to stand watch, but I didn't when I was on board ship. At the end of the war, the last 3 months when we were in Boston, I had shore patrol duty every third night. They caught up with me there, said every third night I had to go on shore patrol duty in Boston to help the shore patrol duty people in Boston, see.
What did they do?
And you go around and you were trying to kind of keep the Navy personnel out of trouble, get them back on board ship if they're drunk, get them out of some of the bars on Lower Washington Street and Scully Square before they got rolled, break up fights, and we had a baton. We didn't have a gun with us, but we had this baton, which was a stout nightstick, and we were told not to hit anybody over the head with it, or you'd kill them, but to poke them in the stomach if we had to, knock the air out of them or something like that. And I remember we had a brawl going into Silver Dollar Bar on Lower Washington Street one night, and I went in there and there was a big guy just ready to hit me in the chin, and he looked at me and I looked at him, and here he was, a classmate of mine from high school, so he didn't hit me. We had a drink together later.
Yeah.
Oh, on the St. Patrick's Day of 1946, the British sailors were kept on board ship out in the harbor because of St. Patrick's Day and all the Irish there. The Navy didn't want any Englishmen on the beach then because the Irish and the English didn't get along that well.
Oh my. Of all the things that you saw, is there any, or had happened to you, is there anything that you would like changed?
I'm trying to think quickly here. Changed. It would have been easier for me in the Navy if I'd been more mature, because I worried about a lot of things, and could be more intimidated. Even though I was big and strong, somebody like an executive officer or somebody yelling at me could intimidate me. If I'd have been a little older and had a little more experience, why, I'd have shrugged it off. I guess that's about the only thing.
Yeah. Just maturity.
But if I'd have been a little more mature, it'd been a little easier. Yeah.
Is there anything of any importance that we haven't covered that you would like to reiterate?
It was good experience, and daily experiences you had. It's one of those things you couldn't buy with money, and you come back healthy. And another thing from World War II, you were respected. You were respected in the service. You were respected after the service. And I am still upset by the way they treated the Vietnam veterans during and after the Vietnam War. And it still bothers me that we were not allowed to win that war, that they were afraid that, you know, World War III might develop. And so they held back the military from doing the things that they needed to do to win it. And when I think about when we evacuated the embassy there in Saigon, when we were, you know, getting our last people out, and there were all those people, Vietnam people, who had fought for us, and their families in the embassy compound that we weren't able to get out, I still feel very bad.
I think we all do. When you came back to Youngstown after your tour?
Well, I went right into college.
You went right into
college? Yeah, I came out in May, and I went to summer school in June at Youngstown College at that time, and I went 3 summers. And this was interesting. You could take, back then at Youngstown College, as they called it then, university now, you could take as many hours as you wanted in the summer, as long as you had a B average. And my third summer, I had 22 hours I took, and I graduated with exactly the number that I needed to get a Bachelor of Arts degree. Exactly.
Wow. What was some of your favorite subjects?
History. I'd read ahead in history. English lit, that was my minor. I enjoyed that. But the science subjects, I just didn't cotton to them. I wound up taking everyday chemistry to get my one credit in science. And I wasn't good at languages either, and I took up chemical German that the engineering students took, you know, to learn the symbols for hydrogen and oxygen and whatnot. And it was an easy language course, and that's what I had to take to get out of.
What were your favorite subjects in history?
Of course, any history. I was always interested in history, American history. And that's interesting. I learned about those things that that about, you know, the blacks and the Indians and problems in our country back in 1946, '47, and '48, that a lot of people didn't learn until 20 years later or so. And so when we had all these problems come up in the late 60s, I was aware of them. I knew about them.
That's interesting. Well, I thank you for your time.
You bet.
And I really appreciate this. And
I'll show you a few things. I won't show you a lot of it, but because you're trying to...